First off, I'd like to recognize my collaborators, Mike Jones from Clemson University, Mark Zornstoff from the National Crop Insurance Service, David Dunn, and Andrea Phillips from University of Missouri. And also, Steve Hawkins from Farmers Mutual's hail insurance company gave me a lot of insight of as far as how hail adjustment would be done with farmers. Since I've been at the Delta Center in Portageville, I think in the 12 years, I've had experience with two hailstorm situations. I talked to Bobby Phipps in Texas, and he said it was fairly frequently out there that he had hail damage, or as he called it, hailed out. I think I had one year where we had a significant stand loss, but we went ahead and kept it anyway because it was enough to still go ahead and do an experiment. Another time, it was just a complete loss. Of course, anybody who's seen this type of stuff, you know it's hailstorm, a different size. When Mark contacted me and Mike about doing this, before we got into the details of it, I had these visions of having a big cherry picker and throwing down cubes of ice or something like that. But in the more of the conversation, when we talked to them, they said they already had a good bit of data on the damage, a partial damage, where the plant lived. What they really needed was information on where you had a complete loss of plants or the plant that was killed completely and what impact that had on yields, and specifically skips in the rows, not so much the plant population, but the skips. Of course, we have skips, and this data could also be applied to other situations where you have poor stands, not just hail situations, of course. But if you have like seedling disease, a lot of times you can replant, whereas hail a lot of times may be later on in the season and there's not any chance to do that. Okay, the objective of our study was to evaluate the impact of row skips and low populations on yield and fiber properties. Several years ago, I did a project with Sean Conley, who's now at Purdue. We did it with grain sorghum where we had PVC pipes and we threw out randomly 3-foot pipes and 6-foot and 9-foot pipes and chopped those out and created skips that way. In this situation, though, we want to do a little bit differently because we knew in the real world where you have hail or something like that, you don't just have discrete skips like that. You also have stand reduction by the other plant loss in between there. Excuse these tens. I don't know why these dots. I guess this is just a formatting situation with the PowerPoint, but at the Mike at his location at Florence, South Carolina, the PD Research Center was non-irrigated. We our goal was to have our checks to have a plant population around 3 plants per foot row. Of course, as Steve mentioned, that we're not manufacturing screws. This is biology. You have to plant a little bit more than you expect to get. And so in this case, we planted 4 seeds per foot a row, hoping to get around 3 plants per foot a row for our chicks. So at the Clemson the PD station, they ended up in their check plots about 3.2 plants per foot a row. And at Portageville, where I'm located, we had 2.8 plants per foot a row. And we were irrigated, and Mike was not. And it's the yields at Portageville were a lot higher, but it was kind of neat, though, to do the comparison here because you can see the different environmental effects on a kind of extreme situation here. So each one of our plots were 4 rows wide and they were 40 feet long. So and then our check, as I already mentioned, we planted 4 seeds per foot a row. And then our treatments were stand reductions, either 50, 40, 30, 20, or 10% stand. So if you want to look at it another way, that like the 10% would be a 90% stand reduction. And this experiment is also sort of a methodology comparison because there's been a lot of work done on low plant population stuff over the years. But we want to look at different ways to try to create a situation where more like a hailstorm or some sort of catastrophe. This is Andrea Phillips, one of the co-authors. Two of the 3 methods we use the seed counter. And so if you had a 40-foot row and you had 4 seeds per foot a row, you would need 160 seeds. So she counted those out, and that would be like a control. If you had a 50% stand loss, she would count out 80. You know, so that's just a you know, it's just a plant population experiment, basically. The other method there we looked at was blending non-Roundup ready seeds with Roundup ready seeds. So in that case, you would blend 80 seeds of Roundup ready versus non-Roundup ready. And then what we do, we went back and sprayed the cotton at early square to kill those plants that were non-Roundup ready. And then we had different blends and different seeding rate to get those at different treatment amounts. Also, we looked at hand thinning. So we ended up with, say, 3 plants per foot of row. That's 120 plants. We used our SAS random number generator and to tell which ones of the plants we wanted to remove. So like here in the, this is plot 105, 50% stand reduction. SAS said we need to remove these plants. The next one, these plants, these. So each one of these, for all four reps, each row was unique. There was no consistency there between them. So we created the same amount of stand reduction, but by using the SAS to do that, it created different amounts of skips. So this is from Mike's data in South Carolina. And I took out the one-foot skip because there were a lot of those. And when we went to the regression analysis, we found that one-foot skips, you couldn't correlate that with yield at all. It's just 1 foot skips are nothing, really. And it pretty much the same way with the 2 skips. It's really the 3 foot and greater than 3 foot that matter. But what I was kind of surprised at, I thought that the uniform rate, that you would have a evenly spaced plants all up and down the row like that. It doesn't work that way. You know, you have some of those four seeds per plant are going to not come up or die. And so you get a little a randomization there going on. Actually, my title, Uniform Stand, is not really correct, I guess. But what kind of this kind of showed you some of the differences between the treatments. Actually, very little difference between them. This is from South Carolina. And this is the, you know, the target stand reductions on the left column there with the checks, 512 pounds of lint. You see that from the top to the bottom, there's really not that great of a yield loss, considering you lost 90% of your stand. It didn't reduce near as much yield as I thought. So he lost about 89 pounds of lint total and used a loam rate of 52 cents, $46, and with a 17% yield loss. So you really can stand a lot of stand reduction, and the cotton plant has amazing ability to compensate for low plant populations. This is graphically looking at it, comparing the low rate and the random thinning versus blending there, and you see that they all behave fairly similarly as far as yield effect. Okay, Steve Hawkins with the Farmers Mutual gave me this graph or chart they use when the adjuster goes out to field to decide how much to compensate the farmer as far as percentage yield loss. In Mike's case, he had 3.2 plants per foot a row or 32 plants per 10 foot a row. What you do is adjuster goes out and they find those stumps of plants that were killed by the hail. And so those were the plants that were totally destroyed. So in this case, it would be the equivalent of destroying 15 plants per 10 foot a row. And then you go over in your chart and you see what your percent yield loss would be. So, and then this is second treatment we had, and then it didn't come out exactly 40%. It was it's 42% actually what we had. And you move over to a second chart there for higher stand reduction. It goes on across like that. So you see how they do that when they're actually going out and field and adjusting. So his stand yield loss was at his highest stand reduction amount was 17%, and this is 23%, you know, they predicted in their thing. Okay, at the location at the Delta Center, it seemed like we had a lot more 2 foot skips than maybe he did, but you see here the greater than 3 foot and 3 foot skips are pretty much neck and neck, or maybe there's maybe more. Longer than 3 foot skips than there are 3 foot skips. Our yields were higher because we use fur irrigation, You see here that our highest yields are a little over 2 bales an acre. We lost about close to 300 pounds of lint with the most extreme stand reduction, which is about 22% yield loss. Our different methods of reducing the stand came out closer as far as regression analysis here correlate between them, which means that these different methods, it doesn't seem to really matter how you do it. They all kind of come out the same. Going through the same procedure here with our Missouri data, 50% stand loss, very little on their chart predicting they'll have a yield loss. The fact is, when you look at some of the data, particularly at Clemson, that 50% stand loss was actually a little bit higher yield than the check. So in a really dry situation like that, sometimes it's better not to have a thick stand. Of course, you don't know what your weather's going to be when you plant, but if you have irrigation, you usually tend to want to have a higher population than a non-irrigated. Okay, what I did here, and I probably should have colored these dots differently because this was for both states. We took a relative yield to the control, and this is a number of plants per foot of row here, and I tried to correlate plant population, basically, or number of plants per foot of row, and of course our check was over here close to 3, so these are reduced stands. You see there's a correlation here, a negative correlation, I guess, or positive, if you go the other way, of relative yield to plant density. What I was kind of surprised at was, of course, in the Farmers Mutuals or the insurance people, they look at plant per foot a row, but they don't look at skips, and they really want to get a kind of handle on this. And what this data is kind of showing is the skips, and I was surprised this, didn't really seem to be any better or maybe not quite as good as plants per foot a row as far as predicting yield loss. So our correlation is not quite as high as with the plants per foot a row. So I thought, well, maybe we'll put both of them together, and I'll look at plants per foot a row and skips. And, of course, this is with both states combined together. You see multivariable on regression, it showed that the probability is not high for skips having an effect on that. But, you know, of course, you look at one or the other. When I did the fiber analysis for these treatments, micronarrow was significantly affected by skips. You see here, we were within the range or under the range of getting a discount of 4.9, but if you had a year where you had a high mic year, it might be a problem. So in conclusion, the random blend and low rate reduction had similar results, and I was somewhat surprised at that. The yield losses from the most severe stand reduction at South Carolina was 17%. Versus 22% at Missouri, and part of that might be because they were in a drier situation than we were. And I don't have Mike's fiber data, but at Portersville, our micronarrow went up with increasing number of skips, which in a high mic year might be a problem as far as discounts. Okay. One final thing is we took digital pictures at different locations that are plot, and we're trying to use color analysis to, of course, our bowls were not green, but Matt Ryan is here. We're trying to get a better handle on the distribution of the bowls with the different skips and things like that. So, all right, thank you.
We still have a few seconds for a question, if you've got any, for Gene.
The skips
affect any of the other fiber quality measurements?
No, I don't. I was trying to remember that. I wish I had brought that printout. I did a statistical analysis on it. I don't think by memory that uniformity or anything else or length was affected by skips. Just micronarrow was the only thing. I was doing this presentation. I was trying to, you know, kind of cull it down, but I don't think I remember anything else being significant. Yes.
As an agronomist back home, we get a question on, you know, what to do with either seaborne disease issue or things like that that will induce sand. Sort of the general rule of thumb that we give, Kevin, is if we take about 50% of the skip percentage. So you've got that, I mean, it's greater than frequent skips. So you have 10% of the field. About 5% decline in yield. How would that measure up to
mature? Five, if about half of that. Yeah, our highest number of skips there. I could go back, I guess, but okay. Number okay, we had six. There are six skips in. That'd be 20% yield loss. Yeah, I think it's fairly close to the same. I was surprised the crop insurance people were fairly close on the money. I remember Will McCarty when I was at Mississippi State said if you have a hard time deciding whether to keep the field or not, keep it. You know, and that's generally true because this field, some of those plots look really bad. I was really for field days and things. I didn't want people to see them because they were so sprouted in. But it was amazing when we harvested how well they did, though.
We still have time for, there was another question.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't you think that a variety with a more, that a bigger plant type, bushier, taller, might be able to have a skip and a little bit better than a more compact, less branchy variety to it? Could that affect it?
Yeah, I would think it probably would be able to compensate and, right. It seemed like over time we've kind of made our plants a little bit more colander and compact to do that. I remember my dad's farm with the one row and two row pickers, if we had a lot of skips, we'd be going down the row, and if you had a big skip and you hit that plant that was just like a tree, all that cotton coming in would almost stop the doors up sometimes. So those older varieties that had those bigger, bushier plants could probably do a better job, I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jim.